Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the R word equals recession when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong and terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments, because we have banned them from our public schools and banned them from our public institutions and banned them from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And we're now teaching our children the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, in our public institutions. We've made the Communist Manifesto a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, wouldn't you say? And are you aware that your daughter, for instance, couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged, that's right, an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution and Bill of Rights. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. And you don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effects. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, and it's informative and entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, not too long past, about a month ago or so, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, a fellow by the name of Alan Greenspan, was giving a speech, and he used the recession word, the R word. It's kind of like the N word and the F word. We got the R word. It's politically incorrect. We're not supposed to have recessions. That's why we have a Federal Reserve System, to prevent these recessions, these boom and bust cycles. But what we've been observing now over the last 15 or 20 years, say since the early 1980s, when we went through that horrific interest rate increase, which hit 21% back in 79 and 80, you know, at the end of the Carter administration and at the beginning of the Reagan years, we had this terrible recession. And we're supposed to smooth out these economic bumps in the road so that we just have smooth sailing forever. The stock market goes up forever, housing prices go up forever, inflation is held in check and maybe even goes down. This utopian world that the government has promised us, at least since 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt took over and told us that all we had to fear was fear itself. Brave words, those. But from the 1930s on, we've had a series of recessions. These are minor depressions. And the depression years of the 1930s scared everybody so bad that they turned over to the government their economic responsibilities. We look upon the government as the protector of our monetary system, of our jobs. We look to the government to give us unemployment insurance when we're unemployed, or to pay for our broken legs if we have an accident on the job. We look to the government to take care of us, and we call this the safety net. It's a socialist welfare program is what it is, and socialism is very, very lucrative. Everybody loves it. We decry it, and we say, well, we don't want socialism and communism here in America, but we have embraced it, and we wallow in it, and we use it every day. And in fact, most Americans couldn't live without it. 51% of Americans receive some form of government subsidy. Somebody somewhere is paying their taxes, and 51% of us versus 49% are collecting from it. We used to call that the dole, or we called it the government trough, and that's where your feeding is out of the government trough. Well, everybody likes it. Now, nobody likes paying for it. And there's a penalty that we're paying. It's called the income tax. Here in America, we used to finance our government with impost and ex post taxes. We taxed those people who wanted to sell their goods in our marketplace, and they financed our federal government. Somebody along the line got it in their heads that, no, we shouldn't tax the French or the Chinese or the Japanese to sell their Toyotas or their steel or their goods in our country. We should tax ourselves with an income tax and subsidize the foreigners instead of the foreigners subsidizing us. Not quite sure who thunk that up, but somebody did. So we're paying a penalty here, and I wanted to point that out to you here in this final program, that recessions are the natural cause and effect relationship that we have with broken law. When you break a law, there's a penalty. Now, there's about 15 of these economic laws discussed in the Bible. I'll give you a couple, three of them here today. And these 15 laws require our observance, or else there is a natural penalty that comes from it. Now, you can see the natural penalties that come from, let's say, vitamin C deficiency. You don't get enough vitamin C, there's a result that comes from it. We call it scurvy. You want to get rid of scurvy, you take more vitamin C. The vitamin C then will counteract, and it will cure the scurvy. And when we have an economic problem, we've been unable, at least in my lifetime, we've been unable to connect the dots and to see the cause and effect relationship between these boom and bust cycles and the paper money and the unjust weights and balances, mortgages and the stocks and bonds and one thing and another. And I guess it's because we're born into a ready-made society and we are taught from early childhood. I mean, when your dad or your mom gave you your first money, they gave you a piece of paper. They didn't give you a gold or silver coin. They gave you a piece of paper. And you went into this nice man in the ice cream store, and you put this piece of paper on the counter, and he gave you an ice cream cone. And you associated the good feelings of the ice cream cone with that real neat piece of paper that you traded for it. And presto, you now understand the money system. You understand the economy. And so you went to public school, and when you bought your school lunch, you gave them paper money. And then later on, you got a job, at McDonald's or someplace, and they paid you with a check. And so you learned about checks. And then somebody said you need a retirement account, and so you got a social security number, remember? And they promised you that if you pay in this amount of money here at the end of the line, when you get to be 65 or so, they're going to give you a retirement check. And so you opened a retirement account, an IRA or a Kroger account of some kind. And paper money is a part and parcel of American society. Indeed, it's a part and parcel with economics in every country in the world. I don't know of any country in the world that uses gold and silver exclusively for their buying, selling, and trading. Now, America used to, in fact, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, France, Germany, Russia, all of the nations of the world, at least the economic powerhouses of the world used to use gold and silver coin throughout the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century and so on. And then one day somebody woke up and said, what we need in this country is a central bank like all the nations around us. And that guy's name was Paul Warburg, and he came over to this country from Europe, from the Rothschild Bank and the Bank of England, to sell this concept to the Americans that what you need in America is a central bank like all the nations around us. We first heard that line back in 1 Samuel chapter 8 when the people said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And we Americans, we like to do what other people do. We're like sheep, you know, we like to follow the British. The British have a central bank, we ought to have a central bank. The British have a world empire, we ought to have a world empire. Hasn't occurred to us that maybe we ought to do something different, that we ought to obey God and keep His commandments, but then that's another story for another day. But let's stick with this economic problem, because recessions are the results of broken law from the Scripture. And like war, war is profitable, and that's why we have lots of it. Peace doesn't have any profit dividend, and that's why we have so little of it. Sickness and disease is very profitable, and that's why we have so much of it. Good health is not profitable, and that's why it is such a rare commodity. Economics works the same way. Paper money has a lot of profit in it. Gold and silver doesn't have any profit in it. It's a means to keep accounts, settle scores, and store wealth. But it's not a commodity. It's not a useful means by which we can make profit and gain. And that's why the people that promote paper money, mortgages, usury and interest, promote it because it's profitable to them. Bank of America makes a lot of money off of paper money and mortgages and usury and interest. Banks, governments, and financial institutions of all descriptions get fabulously wealthy off of the labor of the masses. By the use of paper money, inflation is very profitable. It's not profitable for truck drivers and carpenters and plumbers, but it's very profitable for the ticks and the chiggers, the parasites that live off of us. And that's why we have so much of it. They came to us and they sold it to us. They told us that it was a good program, and that if you would buy into this program called the Federal Reserve, we're going to give you all of these dividends, all of these benefits, all of these profits. What they gave us was income tax and Social Security. That takes one-third of everything that you and I create and produce. Now, there was a time in America when the individuals who were out working in the marketplace got paid in gold, got paid in silver, and they prospered. And today, we go in and we work for our employers, and they pay us with pieces of paper, and before we even get the full amount of the piece of paper now, we have what we call deductions. And so they take these deductions from us. Now, there's a tax protest movement out here. There are people that complain about that and say, hey, wait a minute, you guys are stealing from us. And that's true. They are stealing from you, but they're not stealing without your consent. You see, here in America, we have a legal system or a system of law whereby we require that you alienate yourself from your property in order for someone to take it from you. Otherwise, we'd have a theft. And the guardian of our property are these four words that say, thou shalt not steal. And government here in this country, at least, is not stealing anything from anybody. Now, they might have cunningly coerced you into waiving your rights due to your ignorance, but they didn't steal anything from you, and they're not stealing anything from you in your payroll deductions. And they're not stealing anything from you by inflation. You have consented to these indignities. You've signed pieces of paper. You've got your name on record as giving your consent and your permission. You people are voters. You went down and got a voter's registration card, and you went in and you elected these people to represent you. You gave them your power of attorney. You sent them off to your state houses and to your Congress to enact the laws that make it possible for these people to profit off of your labor. You did it out of your own hand and out of your own mouth. So you got nothing to complain about. Now, there's a solution to the problem. So if you're one of those tax protesters that says, wait a minute, now this government's stealing from me, and I want a remedy to this, there is a remedy. And the remedy is you stop practicing communism. And this concept of paper money comes from the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a central bank. You know, before we had a central bank, we had gold and silver coin, which was prescribed by our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, and implemented by the Coinage Act of 1792. So we had gold and silver in this country until 1933 and then 1964 when Lyndon Johnson took the silver out. Now, it's been restored in 1986. So from 1986 until the present date, we still have gold and silver, or it's been returned, or we've got it back. So we have the same dual monetary system that we've had in this country from 1796 to 1835. And then from 1862 through 1933. And now from 1986 through 2007. The dual monetary system. The Treasury makes gold and silver coin, and a private bank makes paper money. And you have a choice to make. Did you want to use paper money, or did you want to use gold and silver as the basis of your economy? And Americans have overwhelmingly spoken. They want to use paper. Now, I'm not here to take away your paper. I don't think that George Gordon should come along and unilaterally enforce upon you just weights and balances. I think it's a choice that God gave you and told you to choose you now this day, and you have a right to choose. You have made your choice. And as my old granny used to say, well, sweetheart, you made your bed, now go sleep in it. Now, there's a statute or two here in the Bible that I thought I'd share with you over this thing of theft, because recessions and depressions are the natural outgrowth or penalties that we pay for the violation of these 15 economic laws that God gave us in the Bible. That's right, in the Scripture, in the Bible. If you practice those 15 economic laws, everything that you put your hand to do will prosper. You will make a lot of increase. You won't make income, but you'll make a lot of increase. You'll have a lot of property, but no profit. Now, your government has come along and they have substituted income for increase, and they have induced you to work for profit instead of property. Those are legal terms, important legal terms. And it's a choice that you have to make, and you make it. Now, God gave us the primary statute in the Ten Commandments. He says, thou shalt not steal. Just four words, says, thou shalt not steal. Now, you can buy, sell, and trade, and you can acquire, you can work, you can produce, you can take my property in exchange for your property. You and I can trade with one another. We can contract with one another. These are not activities prohibited in the Scripture. There are some economic activities, such as usury. It's against the law for us to pay interest on debt. And it's against the law for us to charge interest on debt in most circumstances. A couple of exceptions, but for practical purposes, the exceptions don't apply to the average Joe Sixpack. Now, our founding fathers followed that scriptural injunction when they used just weights and balances, because in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, God gives us an instruction concerning this thing of money, or this thing of just weights and balances, as he calls it here in the Scripture. So in Leviticus 19:35, he says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meteyard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I'm the Eternal, your God, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So he says, just weights and balances. Boys and girls, Federal Reserve notes are not just weights and balances. A Federal Reserve note costs the maker 3 cents, and he goes out into the marketplace and he expends or he exchanges the paper dollar for 100 cents worth of goods and services in the marketplace. He makes a 97 cent profit. So the Federal Reserve, the United States government in conjunction, under the House Joint Resolution 192, Title 31, and Title 12 of the U.S. Code have enacted a series of laws, statutes, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices since 1933 that have abolished the Coinage Act of 1792 and given us unjust weights and balances in place of just weights and balances that come from gold and silver coin. Now, that's the long and short of it. And Americans have embraced this unjust weight and balance program over here by opening bank accounts, credit cards, taking out mortgages, paying usury and interest, and it has exacted a penalty upon us. And every so often we have a downturn in the economy. We have a recession. Occasionally we have a major depression like we have had in 1907 and 1922, 1929 to 35. And recessions, sometimes severe recessions, you know, such as 1979 and 80, you know, 1954, 1958, just to name a few off the top of my head. So thou shalt not steal, the basic law is supported by a statute in Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, which is repeated in Deuteronomy 25. So if we go to Deuteronomy 25, verse 13 through 16, bear with me here while I flip the pages and find it here. It's 24, here 25. He says, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." So there's your two statutes. It says, now don't use that paper money. All right. Now, what's the penalty if we elect to use paper money in place of, we're not going to use gold and silver, we're going to use paper money. There's a little story over here in the book of Ezekiel. It's called Ezekiel chapter 18. Let me flip over there to Ezekiel and I'll give you a little piece of that story. Ezekiel chapter 18, God gives you the penalties here. He says, if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right. You know, if you're a just man and you do that which God has instructed, you follow these economic laws as an illustration, or you follow the health laws, you don't eat pig, you know. And if you do that, then there's a benefit that comes from it. And if you violate that law, then there's a penalty that attaches to it. It's just that simple. And Ezekiel 18 tells you this cause and effect relationship. So let me share it with you. He goes on to say in verse 6, he says, "It has and has not eaten upon the mountains." So let me read that in its context. It says, "But if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right, and if you have not eaten upon the mountains, neither have lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, and neither has defiled his neighbor's wife, and neither has come near to a menstruous woman. If you haven't had sexual relations with a menstruous woman, or don't, and you haven't practiced adultery, and you haven't eaten upon the mountains." A mountain is a code word for a nation. Eating upon the nations is eating from the public trough. That's why back in the last depression, my family wore this badge of honor with great honor. We were instructed by our elders in the Gordon clan, in where I'm from in California, that no Gordon has taken from the dole. No Gordon has taken from the dole. During the Great Depression, we did not go on relief. We did not take government money. Well, that was what we said. But then later on in 1935, when Social Security came out, we went on the dole, and that's what Social Security is. It's the government trough. And my granddad went down and got a Social Security number because he needed it to work. Well, at least he thought he needed it. He really didn't, but he thought he did. He took his gold down to Bank of America and turned it in and got paper money. He thought he had to do that. He didn't, but he thought he did. And he went down and did that. And so he violated this law. And he reaped the penalties, just like everybody in America, everybody in Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Western Europe. We're all doing the same things. Whether you live in Japan or South Korea or China, you're using paper money and you're all suffering the penalty that comes from it. Now, there are some moneyed people. Your governments, your banks, your financial institutions, they're making a killing off of inflation and paper money. The guy that has the franchise for printing those bills that cost him 3 cents and going out into the marketplace and getting 100 cents worth of value and making 97 cents off of every dollar bill he makes. Now, that's very profitable. Hell, I wish I had a franchise like that. All right, now in verse 7, he says, if he has not oppressed any and has restored to the debtor his pledge, has spoiled none by violence, has given his bread to the hungry, has covered the naked with a garment, and he that hath not given forth upon usury, he that has not paid interest, neither has taken any increase, hasn't taken any usury, that has withdrawn his hand from iniquity, has executed true judgment between a man and a man, has walked in my statutes and kept my judgments to deal truly, he is just, and he shall surely live, says the Eternal. So you can see here that one of the indici that requires a penalty. In fact, usury is the only theft crime punishable by death, as you can see right there. Shall he live? He shall live if he deals truly and doesn't deal in usury and interest. Now, usury and interest are part and parcel with unjust weights and balances. Part and parcel. Now, you've probably bought something on time. I have. You know, I've bought things and paid interest and usury, borrowed money from the bank. I've used paper money. I was a corporate officer. I had stocks. I know how the money system works, and it didn't work for me when I tried. I tried to get rich using unjust weights and balances and usury and interest and paper money and mortgages and so on. And it didn't work when I tried it, and I doubt if it's going to work any better for you than it worked for me, but if you want to try it, well, get after it, you know. My old dad said, you know, experience is the best teacher that you can get. It's a god-awful hard way to learn, but if that's the only way you can learn, well, then, you know, get out there and do it. As I always tell people, you know, bring me a 5-gallon bucket of that, and let's get into it, and let's squish it through our fingers and get into it up to our elbows, and let's feel it, you know, and let's see if we can understand it and use it. Now, he goes on, he says a little bit more here. Starting in verse 10, he says, now, if this guy begets a son, this is a just man, now, he begets a son that is a robber, a shedder of blood, and that does the like to any of these things, and that does not, or doeth not any of those duties, but even has eaten upon the mountains. He goes down, takes welfare, food stamps, and eats upon the government trough. Defiles his neighbor's wife. He goes out and practices sexual crimes like Flo's whorehouse and practicing free love and things like that. If he has oppressed the poor and the needy, if he has spoiled by violence, has not restored the pledge, and has lifted up his eyes to the idols, has committed abomination, has given forth upon usury, making your mortgage payments and paying that interest, and has taken increase, that is, you've charged usury or you've charged interest, shall he then live? He shall not live. He has done all of these abominations, and he shall surely die, and his blood shall be upon him. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement. A pretty powerful statement from sweet Jesus, you know, away in the manger. Now, I've said a time or two, you know, that sweet Jesus, you know, is being misrepresented. And I think that sweet Jesus can speak for himself, and there's sweet Jesus speaking for himself. And I said, now, is this guy going to live? He says he shall not live. He'll surely die. Now, if you want to practice that way of life, of which usury and interest, unjust weights and balances, and sucking off the government trough, you know, if that's a part and parcel with your lifestyle, well then, as old Granny said, you know, you made your bed now, partner. Now go sleep in it. And this income tax and Social Security tax, which are just two taxes out of 14. You're paying 14 taxes now. From no taxes in 1900 to 14 taxes in 2000. That's quite a change, wouldn't you say? And every one of those taxes that you're paying to your government over here for these alleged benefits that you're supposed to receive. Remember, I've told you about Social Security in the past. You know, you PhDs and all you people with letters after your name, you professionals out there that are paying the maximum Social Security payments in. You're making $38 an hour. You're a doctor, you're a dentist, you're an insurance broker, a real estate broker, and you're making $100,000 a year. And you're paying the maximum Social Security tax. For every $5 you pay in, you'll receive $1 back. Now, I don't call that very intelligent economics, kids. And I don't care how many letters you got after your name. Anybody that pays in $5 and gets $1 back, signs a contract and agrees to that, has his head up the wrong end of his anatomy. That's not somebody that can count or read and write. That isn't somebody that's literate or knowledgeable or educated. All right, now let me give you a reminder here. And that is that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio logs, our schedule, and our archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the R word, recession. What causes that? There's a cause and effect relationship that goes along with these booms and busts, and that is paper money. That's the bottom line. Now, in theory, paper money could work. I'm not denying that we could take our money, put it into a pile, a common warehouse, and then issue pieces of paper to represent it and go out in the marketplace and buy, sell, and trade with them. Unfortunately, human beings are basically thieves. We have a problem called human nature. And human beings just naturally lie. Human beings just naturally steal. It's just a part and parcel with the design mechanism that you were designed with. And then we were given a brain so that you can think, so that you can reason, so that you can use your head. How does this work over the long haul? We call it out here on the street connecting the dots. Can you connect these dots? Can you eat Oreo cookies and McDonald's and other forms of swill like Coca-Cola and Pepsi and so on And then when you get diabetes and you get health problems and flus and colds and a heart attack and strokes, can you connect the dots and identify what is causing the malaise or the malady? And the answer is, in most cases, most people cannot connect those dots. Some can. Some can. There are books out there written on health. There's health food stores open out there trying to educate people to the causes of disease. There are doctors and scientists out there, you know, that are studying and researching and writing research papers and trying to tell you, well, here's what causes cancer. You know, one of the things is smoking causes cancer. Did you hear that? You know, smoking causes cancer. I mean, help, most of you people have already heard that. You already know that. I'm not telling you something you haven't heard before. But most people can't connect the dots and say, well, let's see, smoking causes cancer, so therefore I must quit smoking if I don't want to get cancer. If I want to get cancer, I need to smoke more. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out, but most people can't connect those dots. Now, the reason for that is smoking is very pleasurable. Hell, adultery is very pleasurable. If you weren't having great pleasure down at Flo's Whorehouse, you wouldn't go back there. I mean, if it hurt real bad, you know, you'd stay away from that. So we try to avoid pain, and then we try to indulge in those activities that give us great sensual pleasure, and it feels real good, or it smells real good, or it looks real good, or whatever. That's kind of natural. And so paper money feels good. Paper money, credit cards and checks, and borrowing and paying interest feels real good. In the short run, I never made a loan that didn't feel good. I had to make some payments and paybacks that didn't feel so good, but I never made a loan that felt bad. Hell, when I went into the bank, you know, and I gave them my financial statement, which was a pack of lies that I put down on a piece of paper, you know, so I could impress the banker with all of the collateral that I had to pledge, which here in the Bible tells you not to pledge your collateral. It's against the law for the bank to take collateral. But I always felt real good because the banker, he'd smile at me and he'd tell me how great I was and how great progress I was making, you know, and how my investment portfolio was growing steadily. And he was lying to me like I was lying to him. And it made both of us feel good lying to each other, see. He was stroking me and I was stroking him, and then he'd approve my loan, give me $25,000 or $50,000 and say, go out here and buy whatever it is you want to buy, and here's your easy monthly payments and here's the interest rate and so on down the line. Felt real good. And I went out and spent the money. Felt even better. Writing checks. I can't think of a better feeling than writing a check and going and walking out of the store with the goods. All right. Now, then comes the payback. Then comes the payback. Out of this alleged profit that you were going to make with this investment that you made over here, you didn't make as much profit as you thought you were going to make. And therefore, you're having a hard time making the payments and the interest back to the banker. And the banker over here got the money that he lent to you right out of thin air. It didn't cost him anything. And he lent it to you, but you have to work and sweat and produce real goods and services in order to pay this back. So that's why it's immensely profitable to the makers of the unjust weights and balances. And it's a horrible, terrible load that you, the borrower, has to pay back, because you have to pay it back with real goods and services. You got to pay it back with sweat. He doesn't do that when he lends it to you. Now, that's the downside. So God comes along and he says, don't do that. And we come along and say, but it feels so good. And so we're going to go ahead and do it because it feels so good. All right. Well, then you got penalties that you got to pay. Now, that's what happens when you're just doing it at the individual level. Now, when all of us do it, see, when all of us, if a little bit of borrowing and a little bit of interest is good for us and good for our personal economy, can you imagine how good this is going to be when all 300 million of us are out here doing it? So when all of us go out and borrow money, and 70% of our economy now is consumer spending, you know, it's great. It feels real good. I really like going to the Walmart store and paying with paper and walking out with hard goods. And I especially appreciate all you Chinese people over there working for slave wages for $2 a day or $1.50 a day, whatever you're getting. and then furnishing us with the goods that would cost us. You know, if I really had to go out here and pay an American to make me a pair of shoes, cost me $150, I can get the same pair of shoes from you for about $65. And the guy that's selling me the shoes is making the same profit, and he's making it off of your sweat and off of your labor. God bless you, Chinese. I love you. All right, now, unfortunately, this creates a thing called the balance of payments deficit over here. And my common sense says that you Chinese, at some point in time, when you keep producing shoes for us and we keep giving you worthless pieces of paper, when we keep taking all of your work and sweat and give you nothing in return, my common sense says one of these days you're going to get ticked off and quit doing that. And now that we've sent all of our shoe industries over to our whole shoe industry over to China and other countries, 99% of the shoes coming into America come from overseas. We only make 1% of them over here. Looks like to me when you Chinese shut off our shoes that we're all going to go barefoot over here. I looked at that. I thought about that, and I said, uh-oh, doesn't look like long-haul unjust weights and balances are going to be in our best interest. Maybe a little sweat, you know, maybe a little work over here would have been in our better interest. So short term, it feels real good. Long term, this is going to feel real bad. Now you notice that our industries are being shipped overseas, and 5 million good paying American jobs have also been shipped overseas. Makes good economic sense for all you Harvard Business School graduates who are now the CEOs and sitting on the boards of directors of the companies that you have outsourced to China. Now, when you reduce the average American to the same standard of living as the Chinaman, can you explain to me who you're going to sell all those goods to? I just thought I'd throw that out there. Because Americans buy Cadillacs, but Chinese don't. So all of you manufacturers of Cadillacs and all of these real nice expensive Lexus automobiles and so on, you got to have buyers. And buyers that have good-paying American jobs buy those kind of things. Chinese and Japanese don't. So that's where that's at. So you're not going to think about it because short-term it feels so good. And it makes your stock price look good, and it makes your dividends look good, but long term it's SOL. You know, SOL. You know, I can't use that SOL on the air. I can use SOL, but I can't tell you what that means. That's a code word for something. All right. Now, let me explain to you another little thing, that there's a penalty that we have to pay for theft. And here's what it is. In Exodus chapter 22, we have a little story here. It comes from God himself. And he said, and let me explain this theft thing to you, kids. He says, if a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall no blood be shed for him. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him. For he should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. And if the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, be it an ox or an ass or a sheep, he shall restore double. All right. Now that's the way Moses wrote it down. Now Alfred the Great, he was a king over in England about 872 A.D., around the 800s, you know. Alfred codified the Mosaic law into what we call the English common law today. Now we took our English common law and we used that law based upon the Mosaic law, the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments of God, and we made a constitution in 1787, and our founding fathers gave us just weights and balances with the Coinage Act of 1792 and with the gold and silver clause of Article 1, Section 10. Our founding fathers followed this law, this theft law. They actually wrote it right into our constitution. They understood this theft and theft penalty connection. Now we don't. Americans today haven't got a clue. Couldn't connect these dots, you know, at high noon with both hands and a decoding map. Can't do it. Haven't done it. Aren't about to do it. But here's what Alfred said. Alfred codified this, and he said, if anyone steals another's ox or slays or sells him, give him 2 for it, or 4 sheep for 1, if he have not what he may give, be he himself sold for the fee. What? What? Slavery? Bond servitude? You get sold for the theft? Who do you get sold to? See, in the olden days, when you stole something and got caught, they would make you pay what you stole plus an equal amount. That's pay double. If you took the sheep or the cow and you killed it and ate it, we would make you pay four times if it was a lesser amount, like a sheep, or five times if it was a felony, like an ox. Let's picture that. You're a car thief. Then you go out and you steal a car. And you're just out driving around in it, and they catch you. And they give the car back to the owner. And then they send you to prison. Well, who's going to pay for incarceration? Well, the guy you stole the car from. So not only does the guy lose his car, he now has to pay for your penalty or your penal, you know, your penalty, your penal clause, and has to pay to store you in prison. In the old days, under the Mosaic law and under the common law, we made you, the thief, pay the victim of the crime, so that if you stole his car, you got to pay him back two cars. So he gets his car back plus one of equal value off of your labor, thief. That's the way we used to do it. I don't know who thought up this prison system. I kind of like that idea that if you steal my car, I get two back and I get it off your labor. And if you don't have anything to pay me with, we bore a hole through your ear and sell you to me. And then I'll put you to work out here picking up rocks and building fence for me until you work it off. I like that. That was a hell of a neat idea. If a thief break a man's house by night and there be slain, be he not guilty of manslaughter? If he doeth this after sunrise, he's guilty of manslaughter, and himself shall die, unless he did it of necessity, self-defense. Here's your self-defense statute. If with him be found alive what he stole, let him pay for it twofold. So the penalty for stealing a horse, boys and girls, was not hanging. I don't know who thought that up, but that wasn't Moses, it wasn't God, it wasn't Alfred the Great. If you catch a thief, you know, after he's stolen something from you, he has to make restitution. That's what the statute calls for. One exception. If you're charging usury and interest, Mr. Banker, the penalty is death. Go back to Ezekiel 18. You see, usury and interest are the only theft crimes punishable by death. Save for if you get caught at night and you got killed after dark in the dark. All right, now that's the way that theft crime works. Now, God gave us some statutes. He said, you know, if a man steals an ox or an ass or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. And if the thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he died, there shall no blood be shed for him. And if a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep, and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. And if the thief be not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges, to see whether he's put his hand into his neighbor's goods. For all manner of trespass, whether it be for ox or ass, or for sheep or raiment, or for any other manner of lost thing, which another challenges to be his, the cause of both parties shall be brought before the judges, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. And if a man deliver unto his neighbor an ass, or an ox, or a sheep, or any beast to keep, and it dies, or it's hurt, or driven away, no man seeing it, no witnesses, then shall an oath of the Eternal be between them both, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. And if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution unto the owner thereof. And if it be torn in pieces by a mountain lion or a bear, then let him bring the body or the carcass for a witness, and he shall not make good that which was torn. That's called an act of God. So when there's an act of God, we don't have to pay. But if you deliver something to me, and this is always a problem, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you delivered money to me, and you said, George, I want you to go out and do this, that, or something else for me. Go buy this thing for me. And I go buy that thing, and then it's stolen from me. Some thief comes in here and steals it. I've got to make restitution. Sometimes, you know, people will ask me to do them a favor, and sometimes I tell them no. Why do I tell you no? You say, well, Gordon, you're not very hospitable. You know, I ask you to do something for me. That's because I'm liable for it. That's why. Now, sometimes I accept that liability. And sometimes I wonder why, because it's a form of surety. And I guess I'm pretty cocky and confident here that it's not going to get stolen from me because Big Mike is protecting me. But just to let you know here, if it were stolen from me, then I'd have to pay you back. And, of course, I don't want to pay you back because that doesn't feel good, see. And so that's why sometimes I say, no, you better go take care of that yourself. Now, these are the theft statutes. You'll see this in Exodus 22, 1 through 4, Exodus 22, 7 through 13, Leviticus 19, 11, Deuteronomy 5, 19, Deuteronomy 23, 24, and 25. That's Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 24 and 25. Deuteronomy 24, verse 7, Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. You know, there's a lot of statutes here that deal with theft. And using unjust weights and balances is a form of theft. Stocks and bonds is a form of theft. Insurance is a form of theft. And so we practice that theft. And when we do it on a national level, a national scale, every so often there's a national penalty to pay. It's the Great Depression of the 1930s. It's the recession of the 1970s. Or it's the recession of 2000, or the March of 2000. Now, our government, with Alan Greenspan, said, oh, we'll smooth this out. We won't have a recession. We won't let God punish you. And so they've created some bubbles. They created a stock bubble in the 1990s. Then they created a housing bubble. Now, the housing bubble popped, and the stock bubble popped. And now they're out here busily printing up money like you can't believe. 10%, 10.9% a year is the annual rate of increase in the money supply. That's here in America. And you Europeans, I saw a number the other day that was just a shock to me. 19% per year is what you Europeans are inflating your euros with. And the Chinese, of course, and the Japs, everybody is inflating their currency because the Americans are. And the Americans have to, in order to maintain our status as the reserve currency of the world and to maintain our economy to keep it from going into meltdown. So you're already in recession by 8 percentage points per annum. It's a god-awful scary place to be, but you're already there. But you see, in the past, your government has always told you when you were in a recession. This time they're lying to you and they're telling you, oh no, you're not in recession, you're in a growth pattern. The economy is sound and the economy is growing, the economy is vibrant. Well, that's a lie, it's not any of the above. As is evidenced by what you see out on Main Street, as is evidenced by the inflation that you see going on around you. And that's where the bottom line is. So that's why I suggested to you that you take off the rose-colored glasses and subscribe to a couple of these newsletters and start paying attention to reality because you need to take action. Take action. I'm not going to do it for you, and I don't care whether you lose your hiney. You're not going to embarrass me, and you're not going to make me angry. If you don't listen to me, I don't have any duty to prove to you that I'm right or to persuade you that you need to make a change. I'm a reporter. I just report facts. And then I try to give you sources of information so that you can verify those facts by at least two or three witnesses. So I said the international forecaster, that's witness number one. I said the privateer, William Buckler, that's witness number two. Then I said there's a guy named the Mogambo Guru. His name is Richard Doughty. I said that's witness number three. And then I threw in one more for good measure over here. I said, there's Franklin Sanders at the money changer. That's witness number four. I don't care whether you believe them or not. I said, well, why don't you listen to what they got to say? Because they're contradicting Katie Couric and Brian Williams and Lou Dobbs. No, Lou Dobbs isn't all that bad. I'm not sitting here arguing with Lou or Katie or Brian. I'm just telling you, they're not giving you all the facts. You're not getting all the information that you have to have in order to make an intelligent and rational decision. Bottom line, not getting all the facts. And in order to get the facts, you've got to spend a couple of bucks out of your own pocket. These newsletters cost you some money. Well, except for Kitco. These Kitco newsletters, of which there's several, not to mention Peter Schiff is one, and Richard Doughty is two, and there's three or four more. I can't think of their names right off the top of my head, but there's three or four more, and they're all free. For crying out loud, at least take advantage of the free ones. You know, if you're so damn cheap that you can't go out here and spend $150 and educate yourself, well, go do it free and get some information between your ears. And then compare that information with what you're seeing with your own eyeballs. Take a look at the price of gasoline when the president says that the consumer price index is relatively stable at 1.4% per annum. Then pay attention to the prices that you're paying out there in the stores and the 18% increase in food prices over the past year. And then add that up for yourself and see whether or not you agree with the president or you agree with the newsletter writers. You know, just a cause and effect relationship. And then meanwhile, back here on the farm, there's the bottom line. It's the scripture. This is the only guy that I know of that says that I'm the God that cannot lie. And I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever, and I change not. I don't change. And I told us that we weren't to practice eating off the government trough. And I know a lot of you people are on Social Security. You've been eating off the government trough all of your lives. Now, for some of you young people out there, that government trough isn't going to be there for you to eat out of, so you better get used to the idea that if you want to support all of those that are on the government dole today, that's fine, but there won't be a government dole there for you to eat out of when it's your turn. Now, pay attention. Even your mainstream politicians are telling you Social Security is upside down, and Medicare is worse. And even your own president said your payments, your balance of payments deficit is unsustainable. Remember that? Unsustainable. So even your mainstream media guys are telling you, hey, listen, something's got to change here. And then the conservative writers are telling you, you bet, and you better be getting into some kind of an asset that you can save some. You won't save all, but you can save some of your assets. And you need to start saving as much of your assets as is possible. Every dollar that you can save is going to be a very needed dollar very shortly for you just to subsist and survive on. That's the way this deal is coming down. The 1930s are about to come back and bite us in the butt. That's what's coming. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right about here and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.